Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout with Traditions Training and the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. And as always, we'd like to thank Bobby Halden and Fire Engineering and the Clarion Events Group for the opportunity to get out here and spread our view of the fire service around with the group from Traditions Training. I think we've kind of come to an agreement with the International Society of Fire Service Instructors that we're going to do a month, and then the International Society is going to do the following month. So, kind of a joint effort between the two organizations. Of course, we're once again under the guidance of Bobby Halden. So, but we're going to get started today. We got a couple people on. They're instructors, Tradition Training, Raymond Edwards and Scott Kraut, both longtime instructors. We had a couple more guys that are just finishing up some training at their prospective training schools that are probably going to join on in here in a little bit. One of the topics that was suggested by one of our instructors was attention to detail. And that goes back to, fire grounds, the training ground, wherever it is, that we're operating, is that particular, it's the attention to detail that we have to have to ensure that our fire grounds run smoothly, safely, and we're looking out for our people. I mean, that's, a topic that I've started lecturing about is operational readiness. And that is, once again, making sure that the chief officer understands the company officer, the company officer understands the firefighter. The firefighter understands what the company officer has to do, and the company officer has to understand what the chief officer wants. So, kind of melding all those together. Obviously, Ray and Scott are both still riding rigs and running up and down the road and not in a buggy like I am every day. So they'll have a different perspective. And when Mac Williams gets on, he's an engine driver, really busy engine in the District of Columbia. So, once again, to get that take on some of the stuff that happens on the fire grounds. And then obviously there's been doing a lot of we used to call it at Traditions, and they call it box alarm drills, where you do a fire ground scenario where you get a whole assignment of engines, trucks, whatever gets dispatched on your jurisdiction's structure fire responses. And then, you run through the program, or if you have standard operating procedures, or if you're using, the first company officer gets there, establishes command, and then starts directing companies. Most of the Northeast and the area around Washington, D.C. is very SOP driven. But once again, that just puts players in the right spots. It gives you the framework, the groundwork of, how you're going to arrive, where you're going to park, what water supply you're taking, where companies are going to operate. But once again, the fire dictates all that, the fire dictates, how we're going to operate on the fire ground. And then once the chief gets there, that kind of takes that SOP part kind of goes away, because now the chief is taking information from his company officers and then reacting to that information. We always go back to the Washington, D.C. First engine goes to the front. They're going to go to the fire floor, the fire department, and they're going to operate. The second engine, third engine, fourth engine all have assignments inside the structure of where they're going to operate. But once again, if we get good canned reports, conditions, action, needs from the first D company officer to the command post, whether it be the command aide or the chief, and takes that information, and then we're going to apply it to the fire ground. Now, that may take the third engine doing what they're supposed to be doing and send them to another part of the building, depending on the information, the feedback that the incident commander is getting back from the company officer. So, Chief Schultz, always talks about command and control. You listen to a large number of definitions of that from classes that we teach, is that the command part is obviously where we're directing companies, directing hose lines, directing ladder trucks. The control piece is the piece that we get back as the command post from the people that are operating on the fire ground. Look, I probably demand it the most of any chief, is that, having that view of the building. I will park my buggy in the way sometimes, as I'm told, to make sure I get a view of the building. Now, obviously, I'm not going to block the rear ladder chute of a ladder truck or block the rear of a pumper, but I'm going to get in a position so I see the building. Now, that I may only see Alpha Bravo, or I may only see Alpha Delta, where I park, or if I'm going to park on the rear, then I might just see the trolley side. So I'm depending on company officers, driver operators, chauffeurs, you know, the people going to the roof, the search companies, all giving me this information so I can piece it all together and make sure that we're operating the fire ground. And that all comes in with detail, because we just can't go show up at a fire ground and just go, all right, everybody just go put the fire out and vent smoke and search. You know, there has to be certain people doing everything. I mean, if we give four type A engine companies the chance to go put the fire out, they're all going to go for that. Believe me. I mean, and you know, I can guarantee you that I was probably doing it when I was younger, but you know, hey, we got to put the room out. We got to check for extension. We got to have a backup line ready, all those pieces that come together. So I would say I was exposed to this attention to detail in a very young part of my life. So I will not reveal the year that I got on Fairfax County Fire Department, because it shows my age. But the gray hair will be able to tell you that it's been a while ago. But very wild, very ambunctious, young firefighter. Obviously knew everything because I had come from PG, and when I crossed the river, and I got exposed to a very methodical, very consistent, and expected behaviors captain by the name of Ashby Thompson. Very, very strict captain. He would not make it in today's fire service. But he was perfect for me. So, you know, we run a high rise building. So Scott can attest to the number of high rises that we're talking about at this station in Bailey's Crossroads. But so we would run a fire alarm at night at these particular buildings. And after 7 o'clock, we would get a box alarm. So you get like four engines, two trucks, a rescue squad, and a battalion chief for a fire alarm. Thank God they stopped that, or we wouldn't have any fire trucks left in Fairfax County. But we would run these buildings all night long. You know, Leesburg Pike for a fire alarm. 2 hours later, Leesburg Pike for a fire alarm. Fire alarm, fire alarm, fire alarm. And this captain just had a methodical way of reacting to each one of those. Now, hey, maybe sprinkled in the middle, we would get an odor of smoke. Or, hey, we report of a fire, we would get, you know, now look, not every night. Nobody's doing that every night. But every time we'd go to a fire alarm, every time we go to an odor of smoke, every time we go to a report of a fire, he would, the same behavior would happen every time we went to the call. So, I mean, for us in the organization in Fairfax, where Scott is and where Assistant Chief Shaw is that, you know, the first engine abandons the rig. They take all their crew, take the high-rise gear, high-rise packs, force entry tools, you know, full SCBA, PPE, and they would go operate inside the structure to the fire floor. But there's a series of things that had to happen before you got there. So now you got your Knox box keys. Excuse me. You went and checked the annunciator panel. You know, depending on what floor it was, is if we were going to walk or if we were going to take the elevator. So, you know, for us, an example would be we would take the elevator. So it's on the 26th floor of this 26 story high rise that we're running, you know, a fire alarm, an odor of smoke, or a report of a fire. And this captain methodically, you know, even if it's three or four times a night, would just we'd all get in the elevator. He would, you know, put us in fireman service. He would check to make sure the fireman service worked. So he would stop on a lower floor. Then we would stop about halfway. We would stop. He would open up the shaft, take his flashlight, look up the shaft and see if there was any smoke or water in the shaft. Then we proceed up to two floors below the fire, or report a fire, report a smoke, or where the alarm was at. And we would do that every night. I mean, it was astonishing to a young firefighter, to me, that somebody could be that methodical every incident they went in and out on. That attention to detail was not lost on me. The only time it got lost on me is when a company officer or a detail officer, or, you know, eventually, you know, the captain and I did not work together, is watching other company officers that did not have this attention to detail. And I always said, you know, it was great working with my buddies. But you know, I wanted that same officer back. I wanted Ashby Thompson back, because I felt that it always made me better as a firefighter and kept me safer, because, you know, we were following the policy, we were following the procedure. You know, obviously this is in the 1980s. This is before, you know, all the stuff that's going on in the fire service today, with, you know, structured box alarms, structured general orders, you know, following the procedure, chiefs checking in on their company officers, and all that sort of stuff, you know. And I had the luxury, you know, in a break between this captain for a couple of years. And, you know, then I got back to this captain, Tommy Whelan. Once again, very methodical. What I always said was his behavior was always what it was expected. He had very expected behaviors. This is what he was going to do. And it didn't matter if he felt like crap that day and came into work, if it was 100 degrees outside, or if it was minus, you know, if it was 4 feet of snow, the behavior was always going to be the same, you know, and it was consistent. And there's nothing that I think any kind of firefighter wants more than a consistent officer, a consistent chief. That they know that they're going to do these policies and procedures. They're going to do these behaviors at each fire. And that's what the captain wants. That's what the chief wants. And, you know, that way I know what to expect when I get to the call. Each and every call that I run is going to be this way. And in that way, it's not, hey, at this fire, we're going to do this. At this fire alarm, we're going to do that. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. So, hey, you know, don't bring the high rise packs. We know it's the third time we've been here for an automatic fire alarm, so we're not going to go through this process. And, it was very predictable. And I appreciate it as I've gotten older more than I appreciated it when I was younger. When I was younger, I didn't quite understand why we were doing all this stuff and how a fire alarm for the third time of the night that we got to take the high-rise packs, stop every two floors, check the shaft. It was just incredible working with those two guys. To once again, their attention to detail. But once again, you know, you as an individual has to have that. It's great to have a company officer that is able to instill that upon you. Like I said, my problem was when I got to a company officer that was not, I would fall into that rut of not being, you know, one, I wasn't in control of it to begin with as a firefighter, but, you know, hey, maybe I wasn't doing, you know, wasn't wearing my Nomex hood. Maybe I wasn't bringing a tool with me that I had brought when I had these two company officers, you know, where there would never be a thought of not bringing something with you that was prescribed by the general order, the policy, the procedure, or anything like that. So incredible attention to detail. And just, you know, I would certainly say that I think Ray and Scott are going to chime in here, and I'm going to stop talking here in a minute, but it's just that where they're at the fire service today, you know, I sit in a buggy all day. I'm not paying nearly as much attention to the firefighters and the company officers that are walking in the building, other than, hey, they're from company one, they're from company two, they're from company three, and they're supposed to be going to this floor, taking a hose line, doing searches and stuff like that, as opposed to what these guys do as sergeants and as captains each and every day to ensure their crew are paying attention to detail and what they have to do. So, Scott, I'm going to let you, So let me get to this other point here. I got way out of whack there for a second. So I apologize. So what I really wanted to first talk about was that when we talk about this attention to detail, I would urge all of you to go to, if you're looking at this on Facebook or social media, Fire Engineering has attached a recently published line of duty death report from Frederick County, Maryland. Battalion Chief Joshua Laird from the Frederick County, Maryland Fire Department. This line of duty death report was written in conjunction with some outside parties, the members from the Frederick County Fire Department, the IFF local. They certainly got a lot of expert opinion on it. But this is a fire that is very, very similar to the fire that killed Nathan Flynn in Howard County, Maryland. Very, very eerily similar. To what happened there. I mean, even how the fire started, which is even scarier. But, you know, once again, we had Josh Burchek do that class, Russian Traditions. That's available on YouTube. And he talks about that fire, but that's more about the RIT operation. You can go and research Nathan Flynn training days. They've had more than one of those that they've recorded where they talked to different officers that were on that particular fire. But to go back to the Frederick County one, the one that I just read, what an incredible amount of information, not just information like, you know, the geography, the how the fire department operates, how the fire started, which is an important part of the report, but just the amount of time and effort that's put into human behavior. What happened here? Why did this person do this? You know, so it's an important report to read. Because I don't think it reads as a lot of after action reports or line of duty death reports. So it kind of gives you that piece that's in there about you know, human behavior, why people do what they do, you know, and what we sell short. I mean, you know, it's, you know, Ray will be able to talk to you about, you know, being a, you know, riding a rig every day as a sergeant. And then all of a sudden he's a chief's aide, and just the difference there of what, you know, the sergeant riding the right front seat is looking at, as opposed to what the sergeant as the command aide is looking for. So once again, I strongly recommend that you read that report, highlight pieces in it. I mean, I'm not done highlighting the report yet. And I've read it now for the third or fourth time, and take those pieces of information, because it talks a lot about, you know, attention to detail, about, you know, how companies operate, how company officers operate, how chief officers operate. And then, you know, are you doing badly? You know, hey, are you doing really good in your organization? But, you know, as a whole in the fire service, you know, there's plenty of people to listen to. I mean, you know, all of us across the country listen to Chief Alan Brancini when he's alive, you know, or whatever chief officer from another organization. It's a, you get judged on the fire service as a whole, not your geographic location. So good information all the way around. So, Scott, I've rambled on enough, so I'm going to let you chime in there, bud.
Okay, thanks, Chief. Well, you said a bunch of things that I wrote down, obviously, that that I think sort of could start this off for me. And the first part is the fact that, we, you know, most departments do have doctrine that set the stage for how we're supposed to operate. And I think we get in trouble when, number one, we don't follow that doctrine. And number two, when the environment doesn't match the doctrine. So, as you stated earlier, you know, the whether it's smoke on the floor, food on the stove, odor of smoke, or a fire alarm, as long as we keep those steps and processes in the same way, then we're typically not going to screw that up. Obviously, there's always those things that are out of our control, but more likely than not, if we follow, if we pay attention to detail, and that goes, and I'll get into that in a second here, we're not going to miss a step. And, you know, it was interesting with the Frederick County line of duty, the report, I think it's the first report that I can remember. Now, you always can find it in the appendices, but it's the first report that I can think of that has a section on human performance. And I think the fire service as a whole, I know, Chief Shaw and Doug Mitchell and all of us, all of you, somehow that has taken a seat in our collaborative idea of how things need to be done. And the report, like you said, being very similar to Howard County, is eerie. In Fairfax, we've had four fires that are eerily similar within the last 2-3 months, where we've had people operating above the fire, and we've just gotten lucky. We've got enough people on the scene and we've had chief officers that recognize that the crews are operating where they shouldn't be, and either withdrawn them or got the ensured the line was stretched to where it needed to be stretched. But the reason we're getting into those positions is because we're missing steps. And you, as you know, the chief officer, is only as good as my report to them. So, and I'm only as good as the guys and girls that are working below me. So I think it's a holistic sort of, everybody has to be working in concert. And that starts with, in my opinion, it starts with me as a company officer, in that I have to know what the chief, is in need of in order to successfully come up with a strategy. And then I need to ensure that my crew is tactically sound to carry out that strategy. So for me, and I always tell this to my crew from day one, and I, you know, if anybody's coming up as an officer or newly promoted, just understand it's going to take time, but it has to be done quick. It has to be done right, but it has to be done quick, in that you need to get, if you're lucky enough to have the same individuals every day, you know, it's going to take you 6 to 8 months to get them on board with what your expectations are. And we do something called, you know, and I'm an engine boss, so obviously the truck stuff is separate, but not different. But we have a couple plays that we call that are very simple, that allow me to call a play as you would at a sports event, or, you know, as in a football playbook, that allows me to call play as we're going down the road based on the information I have. And then just like football, there may be an audible. And those plays are called based on the doctrine, the SOPs, the SOGs, policy and procedure. But I have chunked them down based on human performance issues. So just for instance, and I think I've talked about this before, we have a 2-1 and a 1-1 that we use for the outside in fires. And we only carry the two different diameters of hose in Fairfax. We carry 2.5 and 3/4 or 1.88. But those plays are based on the volume of fire and the fact that it's an outside in fire. So the 2-1 would be a 2.5 to the exterior based on the volume, whether it's a garage fire, deck fire. And then the 1 is the 1.88 to the front door, which allows us a couple things. Number one, if we're fast enough, we can knock down the exterior fire, prevent it from going in, or at least quiet it down, and then transition to the line at side alpha. If it's too much fire, or the terrain or the environment makes that impossible, then at least there's a line at the front door for the second engine, and we've accomplished the goal either way. But that's just one example of, again, the detail-driven sort of way that we operate. And I'll just go one step further, and I'll turn it over to you, Ray. I think the importance of details is, if you look at the small things that we deal with, my career has been a little weird in that, I came to Bailey's Crossroads as a lieutenant, working technically with Chief Shaw and Chief Riley as my subordinates. And lo and behold, they taught me a lot, probably an extraordinary amount. And that being said, I was used to looking in the compartments and going, check, okay, there's the bars are there, the hook's there, there's the bottle jacks, there's the come along, whatever that may be. And without actually knowing what those things are capable of, knowing that this 30-inch bar and that the ads is 2 inches wide, and that the lifting strength of the bottle jacks, or it's a 2-ton bottle jack. I still see that today where, guys and girls are, so proud that they're riding a piece of equipment and to the point of arrogance. You have to look at them and go, can you tell me what that bottle jack lifts? Do you know how to operate it? What are the potential uses for it? And, lo and behold, a lot of times, no clue. And that's cool. That's great that you want to ride the ladder truck or the engine company, whatever piece of equipment it is. But, knowing those little things, because that's when, we're all pretty good at looking good on the fire ground. But we also know that these tragic events occur because of small things that either were not learned or were not carried out because of lack of training or lack of discipline or just apathy. That's a hose line. I can stretch that all day long. Yeah, but can you stretch it around 2 cars, a bush, a stop sign, and do it efficiently in a manner in which you're going to have enough hose, not too much, and you can do it fast. So details are super important. We'll get into some more here in a minute, I'm sure. But go ahead, Ray.
Just to touch on one of the things you were talking about, and it goes back to Chief Riley talking about the officers he had with the methodical steps they do on the high-rise fires of the same procedure every time. You can think about how you talked and said the reports giving the size up, the reports they're giving to the command officer as companies are either approaching the building or moving into the building are huge. And the attention to detail is, it's an interesting topic. I've been around with other instructors at the training academy talking about this. Is it a thing that everyone has, or is it learned? I think everyone has a momentary lapse in that attention to detail, whether it's changing of the roles, being promoted, becoming a driver for the day, things that they might be good at, they're sort of missing. being a Chiefs aide, it gives me a unique perspective. Listen to the reports of units approaching the scene. They're giving size ups. It might be the report of the fire might not in the notes look that promising. Maybe there's people trapped or a vacant building. As units get on scene, they're giving you updates. As a command officer, when we arrive on scene, we're looking at, we're seeing the conditions, and you know who your players are, who your officers are that day. Some of the reports they give across the radio are, I can't believe they just said that. Whether it's they can't find the fire and you're looking at them and it's coming through the roof above them. And you have to kind of sit back and think of like, well, all right, maybe they're stressed in the role and they forget something. And I think it's important to know those methodical steps that we talk about, going back to the basics of knowing what's going on. Okay, did I do my 360? Did I check and see if there's smoke coming out of the windows, out of the eaves, where it's at? And I think a lot of people get caught up in the moment and what's right in front of them and not seeing the big picture of, and that's really important details of, you know, we have high heat on the first floor. What was going on? As clear as day, if I'm sitting in front of the building, everyone else can see it. There's smoke coming out of all the basement windows. That officer obviously missed it, give the return. You know, at the end of the fire ground, they put the fire out and they're talking about it and they're realizing the mistakes they've made. They were quick to make a radio transmission without going through their steps, checking where the fire's at, checking where units are at. And it could be as simple as that. And we talk about a worst case scenario, a Mayday RIT situation. A firefighter's lost in the building, stressed. They start to panic. They start to breathe air down. It might be something as simple as how deep am I in the building and recalling that. And that's the important detail we want to talk about. How many windows did I pass? Well, it's a one-story house on a slab, and people get so caught up of walking around circle that they know if they walk 25 feet in one direction, they hit a back wall and another one, and it's a small house, or feeling where they're at. Am I on tile? Am I on carpet? Is it a bathroom? Am I in a hallway? And it's, you know, Scott, you talk about the stress inoculation part, recalling that, slowing things down, going through my steps, my Mayday procedures, getting that reset, and looking at the real details of thing and solving the problem yourself. One of the biggest things is that the District of Columbia, we started this program, the attention to detail. And I've only had a small part of it, but teaching at the Academy, we started these box alarm drills and in-service company drills to work on fire ground issues that were brought up in hot washes and noticed by chiefs over the past years to try to get companies working to correct them and keep the repetitions fresh. As we had companies going down there, we've noticed through the instructors that other things were being missed, simple things, stretching of a line, extra hose, forcible entry, some minor forcible entry issues that could have been adjusted when we talk about it later on. And they're like, well, we couldn't figure out, we came up short. Well, there's 10 people standing on the line, all of which could have helped flake the line out. 10 people missed that attention to the detail that this one company could have put a room and content fire out if the other people were helping along. And I don't know if that is changing of the fire service, or it's just, as Chief Riley talked about, officers coming through, few of them pushed the agenda of doing the same thing, getting down to the basics and accomplishing the job. Some officers he had did not. And I think it's important that we pass that message on to everyone, like, hey, we have a job. The ultimate job is we have to put this fire out. We have to save lives. It's the only way we're going to do that is if everyone jumps in and helps with these small little things, the attention to the detail.
So Ray said something. Ray brought up a pretty good point that I wanted to address. He said, you know, he watched the lapse in attention to detail. The true danger in all this is not addressing the lapse. It's not the lapse itself. So so as sitting in the buggy as an incident commander and you have a company officer who is dealing with managing, you know, two or three firefighters. He's managing an action, which could be stretching a hose line, throwing ground ladders, you know, making rescues, doing searches. So, you know, their plate is pretty full as a company officer. And, you know, Scott and Ray can both attest to that as current company officers that ride fire trucks, is that, you know, their plate is pretty full, and the fire service just keeps adding more and more to their plate every day. You know, it used to be, you know, hey, engine one's on the scene, got smoke showing. Boom. Then we stretched the line and went to work. You know, now we're telling you got to say six different things. You got to run around the building. You got to control your crew. You got to check the basement. You have to stretch the right line. You know, is it an outside in fire? Is it a, you know, fire that's extending on the outside of the building? You know, where we're going to start a search is we're just adding more and more to that plate. So the chances for a company officer and a company to miss a step or miss a process or, you know, it's got to be exponentially, the chances have to be exponentially larger just because the amount of money we're putting on their plate. And then if we get there and the fire, you know, once again, as Chief Shaw would say, the fire's got to vote. You know, this SOP worked great for a one bedroom fire or a two bedroom fire. You know, you got four engines, two trucks and a rescue squad. You know, what happens if it's in a garden apartment building, you know, and we got, you know, a whole apartment off, it's in the terrace level, it's extending up the outside of the building. You know, we just have way too much going on, you know, to control it. And then we have, you know, what if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and we have, you know, numerous, if not tens and tens of civilians that have to be rescued. You know, we have to, you know, you have to balance that. The incident commander has to balance it. The company officers have to be able to give that information back to the incident commander to make that, to make those decisions. But so if that company officer, the firefighter, somebody misses a step, you know, we'll go back to me in the car or Ray as the command team, you know, in Washington, D.C., you know, that's kind of our job to go, hey, engine one, did we do a basement check? Hey, engine one, did we check smoke on the first floor? You know, just giving that reminder. It's not a, we're not calling you out on the radio. We're not trying to make you look bad, but there's certain things on fires that are happening today that have to be checked on, you know, and do we have fire smoke in the basement? You know, if we go back to a fire in Washington, D.C., unfortunately, I don't have the date of the fire in front of me, but it was in the 2000s, obviously. You know, on 4th Street in Washington, D.C., is that, you know, that is one of the very first times, and I've been going to a lot of fires at that particular time till the 4th Street fire said, look, you cannot go to the second floor of this house if you have smoke on the first floor. You know, if you have smoke on the first floor, you have to find out where that smoke is coming from before you go up to the second floor and do any kind of operations, whether it be search and rescues, extending a hand line, or anything like that. And, you know, unfortunately, Max got tied up at the school, at the train school, but he is probably one of the better company officers that I get to the pleasure of hearing on a fire ground because he's, once again, he's methodical. He follows, you know, the processes, but he gives a report from every floor that he operates on. So if the reported fire or smoke or alarm is in apartment 301, you know, I'm getting a report from, hey, we came into the first level, we have no fire or smoke. Hey, we're up on the second level, we got no fire or smoke. Hey, we're up on the third level, we got a light smoke. So now I know that these floors are not, you know, we don't have a problem with. Now, if he goes in on the first floor and says, hey, we got smoke on the first floor and the reporting apartment's 301, yeah, we got a problem. You know, we got to solve this problem before we go to the problem on the third floor. Is it smoke banking down? Is it coming from somewhere else? You know, is the fire really in 101 and it's just extending up to 301, or that's where the smoke's coming from? But once again, if Mac forgets that for whatever reason, you know, if he's on his 15th medical local of the night, then he runs this box alarm and they're exhausted, which, you know, there is, you know, fire departments today, you know, even if you're in a slow suburban or department or something like that, they, you know, you're getting beat up by call after call after call, you know, because we're just not running, you know, the heart attacks and the building fires anymore. We're running every type of call in between, you know, the smoke detectors, the lift assists, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, that all has an effect on the decision-making process of the officer because they're tired. I mean, nobody can go a full bore for 24 hours. There are some company officers that can, I mean, but you know, there is a chance it heightens the chance for a lapse. And that's the part that, you know, people get upset about, I think, when we call them out on their lapse, and we're not calling them out. It's just a process that has to get done. So I just don't want you to forget the problem or the lapse. You know, that's the most important part. If I'm making any sense, Scott, am I making any sense, or am I talking out of the side of my head?
No, I'm making great sense. In fact, I you brought up a great point, and we've talked about this before, in that, my plate's full. They want a 16 point size up. I don't even know what 16 of them are, or 15 of them. The one that matters to me, obviously, is their basement. I brought this up years ago, and I think what sparked it was 57th Avenue, Ricky? Was that right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know why, but I guess I was just shocked that, you know, that there was no lapse at that, you know, up to that point. And again, I'm not shocked because we're any better. I'm just shocked because you just sometimes assume that all departments have these processes. And that brings me to a tiny war story. It's not really cool, but just to throw it out there, because I mentioned it before, almost 20 years ago, Chief Riley and I walked into a rancher with a basement that I had done a lap on, but the deck was covering the small basement window. There was no walk up or walk out. And to Chief Riley's point about missing steps, we walked through the front door and Ricky saw smoke coming from the floor vents. So, not a big deal, wasn't a huge fire, but, you know, that was a huge learning lesson for me that, you know, okay, I did everything I was supposed to do, but somehow I missed it. And even then they weren't looking for 16 points. So that was really all I was concerned with. But what I'm seeing now is, and Ray, you brought it up, is I think everybody's so eager to sound good on the radio. We did this when I was at the training academy. It's a good drill for anybody, but I'll get to that in a second. But we're so eager to check those boxes. And we saw it a couple months ago in Fairfax when a report was given, a fire on the second floor, and fire never existed throughout the entire incident on the second floor. But that first in unit officer had been through so many, you know, to the human performance piece of it, I've been through so many, PowerPoint or fire studio training evolutions where fire was on the second floor that just came out of their mouth. There was never fire on the second floor. It was in the basement. And so it's pretty scary stuff. But, when I was at the training academy, and actually Roger and I did this, I don't know where, but years ago, you know, have them take a lap and then, you know, place a few objects out there. But most importantly, you know, put fire or a victim somewhere and see if they even catch it. Because I think we're very, you know, in Fairfax, we're very guilty of it. You know, we're at the point now where they want us to label the floors. And I don't know if it's because I'm getting old and crotchety or just that I'm to the point where I need to focus on what I need to focus on. I don't need the floor labeling is for the chief officer. You call it what you want. I'll tell you where I am. I tell you what's going on, but you can call it basement 1-2. You can call it ABC. You can call it, you know, whatever. But that just adds another level to my, I've already given you the lap. I've told you that there's fire in the basement and I'm going into number one floor or I'm going through the slider or whatever that may be. For me to then have to stare at the building one more time and tell you, you know, well, let's call it this. When from the front, it appears that they're labeled T1 and then one and then two. It, from your perspective in the car, it may look like, you know, two in the front, three in the rear, but does it matter if it's terrace 1-2? Does it matter if it's 1-2-3? You know, as long as I give you sort of where I'm operating and that there's a floor below me and a floor above me, or two floor, you know, whatever it may be, split levels obviously are the worst. But I think that's what's we're trying to fine tune this so much so that to Chief Riley, your point from back in the day, there's got to be a balance in the middle where I'm giving you enough information for you to form a strategy and to track units. But yet I'm not task saturated with all of this information. All I care about on that 360 is there a basement, honestly, because at this point, we're getting the fire service in general is getting super lucky. There's certain, and we're not getting lucky. There's certain fires that we can't control, that, that things happen, but that's one of them. I just feel it's not acceptable. I need to slow my game down, so that my lap is purposeful. Again, details that I am pointing a flashlight in the window day or night so that I can actually see, yes, there's a basement. Is there any fire? Is there any smoke? And, to Ray's point, you know, am I going to a floor, or Chief, he might've said it, am I passing a floor with smoke on it? You know, that should never happen. And then lastly, what I write down here, I was just curious, Ray, can you tell, just from your perspective, your new perspective, can you tell from those reports, can you get a sense of whether things are going to go okay from maybe the initial on scene? Can you tell, can you get an idea of the experience level, the stress?
Yeah, I think, knowing, like I said, the players involved, who it is, you know, human nature has a lot to play in. If you have an excitable officer, they may be a great firefighter. You have to somehow break down that message they're giving it. It might sound frantic on the radio, but if they're giving you and painting a good picture of what's going on, you're looking at it, you're like, oh yeah, they're frank. You know, that's how it is. But if, well, Chief Riley mentioned a 4th Street, you know, this is a prime example of it, is that fire happened in the District of Columbia. There's officers in the District of Columbia Fire Department that were on that fire, and they still make the mistake, whether or not thinking about it. And I listen to it on fire grounds, record audio. I listen to the training, and I've been on fire grounds where they give a report of smoke on the first floor, and next thing you know, they're on upper floors. And it's like, well, let's bring it back down. You're getting ahead of yourself. And they really didn't even realize they said they had smoke on the first floor, because the notes came out as report of a fire on the second floor. And that's kind of like one of those things is, well, the detail was there. You're biting into a dispatch, or another fireman said something, and you missed the big picture of, hey, we're passing a lot of smoke to find steps. And that's another one, the biggest thing. I have smoke on the first floor, zero visibility. I'm looking for the steps to go up to the second floor. And it's like, and later when you talk to him, it's like, I didn't even realize I said that. It's like, yeah, you're looking. And that's kind of the thing. And some of these officers and even firemen have been around for years. And it's just that I think it's, I'm biting into my, you know, objective of fire on the second floor. That's where I'm going to go. I would be a little less, you know, judging of them if they said, I'm looking for the basement stairs, you know, because that is super important. Look at it. It's, you know, it's a fireman killer. That's one of the things. It's like, as soon as they say that, it's like, okay, this isn't, the fire's not going to go well. The one scenario I know they run constantly when they do command stuff, and Chief Riley, you could talk to this, is garden style apartments, right? People are giving returns of like, yeah, there's a fire in a kitchen or a laundry room. It's out. And you're looking at the building and said, yeah, we have a little bit of smoke coming from the eaves. And right away, they want to return units, when anyone that's been in a garden apartment knows manpower, hose lines on every floor. Because by the time you see it coming out of the eaves or around the roof, it's already up there. And people forget they were firefighters in those companies that ran this. And now that they're an officer, they're quick to give that return and not thinking of all the processes that go into that.
Sorry, I'm taking a lot of notes from that.
No, sorry.
From that one. So it's interesting what Scott said, is that, look, you know, I tell people in classes, look, I live and breathe this stuff. You know, I mean, I have a way, you know, I live and breathe it. So I'm not asking everybody to live and breathe it like I do. But, you know, when you're on duty, you're at the firehouse, you know, volunteering or whatever, and a box comes out or a structure fire comes out in your jurisdiction, that maybe you're not running it. I worked with Ray a little bit at, you know, at our volunteer house, but I work with Scott a lot, you know, and I know Scott and I both had that same mentality. You know, if a box came out in a area close to us, we were listening, or if it came out, you know, Fairfax is some 400, close to 500 square miles. If it came out you know, 50 miles away from us, we were listening to that, about that box also. And one, it goes back to what Scott was saying about talking about, do you know, when you listen to the company officers, can you tell what's going on inside the building? You know, even if you're not kind of looking at it, I was driving Timmy Sparrow, you know, and to a fire, and you know, this captain, Tommy Whelan, who I have the utmost respect for, the methodical guy, the attention to detail guy, he just marked, said engine 28. And I looked over to the officer. I said, we got a fire. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, it's a fire. And he was one half octave off of his normal talk. And I said, it's a fire. And it's funny because I never thought I was like that. I try to be pretty methodical. I just had a fire on Monday, and the battalion chief that came in behind me goes, oh, I knew it was a fire by the way you talked on the radio. I'm like, was I screaming or something? Did something hit me over the head? He goes, nope, you're a half octave off of what you normally talk. And I'm like, holy crap, man. So I've listened to that fire like 9 times now with one of those meters to try to figure out if I'm really an octave over or whatever when I have fire showing. But, you know, once again, paying attention to those details, paying attention, you know, Ray has that opportunity that he knows all the company officers in his battalion. And, you know, because he can look at a chart, look at telestaff, same with Scott, and know that, you know, hey, if we run a call today, it's officer so-and-so, you know, this is, you know, I know him, this is his procedure, this is how he operates, you know, and once forward, it's, you know, have that company officer having the expected behaviors, consistent behaviors, predictable behaviors, in a, once again, in that world that's unpredictable, you know, and I got to go back to Dan Shaw's thing is that SOPs, policies, attention to detail officers, all that stuff is stuff that we have to focus on. But man, once we have that guard apartment fire or that apartment fire, which Ray was referring to, you know, we have a fire in a terrace level and it's jumping floors and it's in the attic already. The resources that we send to that fire already are overwhelmed. You know, we can't get a line on every floor. We can't get a line in the attic. We still have to do searches at 3 o'clock in the morning. We can't get up on the roof and do a trench to get it going to the exposures because we just don't have the staffing. So once again, that is the company officer, you know, Scott and Ray getting there, you know, painting that picture, you know, giving good information. And then, you know, hey, going, hey, it's a garden apartment, 3 o'clock in the morning. We got people hanging out in the woods. We got a well-advanced fire in the terrace level. All right, I'm calling for extra people, you know. Get rather than what Ray was referring to as the company officer that gets in there and wants to return the units order quickly. That is the officer that scares me the most. You know, hey, got food on the stove, hold one-on-one. All right, that's great. Have we checked for extension? Have we done a search? You know, is somebody passed out in the apartment? You know, have we checked the smoke levels on the two floors that are above that? You know, all those pieces, you know, if you got a good company officer, you know, if it's Scott Kraut, you know, who I know, am I going to believe that his one-on-one is a good report? Yeah, because I know his processes. I know his behaviors. But the point there is that now I have a young company officer who is 30 miles away listening to that call, you know, listening to Scott say one-on-one and go, well, why isn't the chief asking for more information? You know, just because it's Scott Kraut, you know, no, I mean, I should be asking that information on every company officer. I mean, Scott knows. I mean, I got away with a lot of stuff in Fairfax because they said, oh, it's Ricky, you know, and I shouldn't have gotten away with it. You know, I should have been more methodical. I should have had better behaviors. And that, once again, that comes from good company officers. So once again, just stuff that I kind of written down. So Ray or Scott, you got anything else you want to add on there? Or?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you said, you know, that, you mentioned the predictability, and the one thing that gets we all talk about, we've talked about it before, but just that, again, I guess you could look at it as a training nugget for anybody else. But if you're thinking about it, one of the things that I do with my company, and I know you guys do, but if I can, and you hear it today more than ever. So people are calling out hydrants, you know, leaving the firehouse. And I understand why, because they're trying to get that off their plate. That's one little item that they can, you know, shift over to the side and go, okay, now I can focus on getting there, getting dressed, whatever it may be. But, and that's good. But you need to take that farther in that. And again, we've got a large area, and I know, Ray, you do too, in the District of Columbia, and you know, we're all operating in the sort of the same environment, but knowing your area is huge, because then I can paint the picture without even, not without taking the lap. But when we were talking gardens, that just sort of made me start thinking about it. You know, I can say with confidence, and I've been at my current firehouse for 3 years, almost to the day, that I can almost tell you, you know, how the apartments are numbered, whether they're two in the front, three in the rear, three in the front, four in the rear, at about 85% of my gardens. I can tell you without, you know, without technology, how long the stretch is going to be to, you know, these three addresses. I can tell you, you know, from the right to the left entrance, what the stretch may be. And that's just because, you know, my crew and I get out there constantly, because that, like calling the hydrant out, allows me to feel comfortable in my environment. And, you know, I've got, you know, just like, you know, probably not so much you, Ray, but I've got gardens from the 1960s to, you know, yesterday. And so you know, we're going from brick and mortar to, you know, wood and vinyl, from enclosed stairwells to wide open stairwells to four apartments per floor to 15 per floor. And I think knowing that early on, and having that sort of ingrained into your head and your crew, it makes everybody's life a lot easier when you get on scene, because we are dealing with an unpredictable and sort of unforgiving environment at 3 a.m. That if you have some of those tidbits of knowledge already stored away, that it allows you, I won't say obviously a stress-free environment, but it reduces it, because you know where the hydrants are. You know that, okay, you know, we did this 2 weeks ago and it was 250 feet, but, you know, the second engine's not going to be able to get that much hose in there. So let's go ahead and run a 2.5 with a gate on it into the courtyard. You know, stuff like that, so that those plays, again, if you want to call them plays, can be reproduced when it's actually on fire. And so I just think it's important, because we're talking about details, and knowing your area, to me is a big detail that is often overlooked, because as Chief Riley said, we're running 13 calls a day, but you know, taking that extra 5 minutes to go ahead and run the line while you're there after the medical local, or to walk it out, at a minimum, walk it out. But no reason you can't stretch, just so you have that visual, that mental, that rep, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I think makes a big difference.
Ray?
Yeah. And that's a huge part of it. That's, giving that layout too, and showing, the knowledge of the area of the building is units might be coming in that don't know that. And I recall a time when first due company, that this is their regular crew, everything, apartment fire, came up short in an apartment building, and they could not figure out why. Same thing. They never stretched a line through it, right? They knew the layouts and everything up to that point. The floors pulling up on another company coming in, you could see the building was a block and a half deep. So right there, they've been to the building for medical locals, but that attention to the detail on that in their own company with crew that's been there for a while, just never stretched a line on that shift through there, and failed to realize that a pre-connected hose line was going to come up short. Everyone else recognized it when they pulled up and the fire's coming out of the back of the building, and you could barely see it because it's a block and a half deep. And that's, I think that a little bit extra that people forget about. And I think it goes back to our whole thing of the tradition of it. Let's go back to the basics. Let's remember the good size ups, the layouts, the stretches, and everything else kind of just falls in place after that.
All right. Well, we're kind of getting close to our time, but one of the things that I think, I'm sure we may have brushed over, but I just want to make sure I wrote it down, was when Scott was talking about, and I'm sure he's exaggerating the 13 point or the 16 points that they want to give us a size up, but they certainly ask a lot. But, you know, to go to Ray, go to Scott, and, you know, Scott, big organizations, even if you're in an all volunteer organization, and you know, you depend on other volunteer companies to come into your area to assist you. Scott and I worked together for a long time, but you know, every day we took leave, you know, we took annual leave, you know, you had to take sick leave. So we weren't always working together every day. So that means it brings a different player into the game, and you know, what that player's capabilities are, what his behaviors are always subject to when the call comes out. Scott could be working as a captain today. Ray could be working as a sergeant, on an engine company, on overtime or something, and then have no idea the capabilities or what that person riding behind them, how they've been trained. I mean, that's a pretty good statement for both of you, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
We go back to Scott's point is that we're going to go, hey, look, we need 16 points for you to tell me all about this building. I need you to give me all this information. I need you to regurgitate all this at 3 o'clock in the morning after you've run, you know, 5 or 6 medical locals. But the point that we always seem to forget is that Scott and Ray have to look out for the other 2-3 people that are with them. You know, are they doing the right thing? Are they making the stretch correctly? You know, is the coupling caught behind a tire? You know, are they raising the ladder upside down? You know, you never know who you're riding with. And then it's just when I say about the volunteer organizations is that, hey, you never know who's going to show up for the call. And then if you have other mutual aid volunteer companies coming in, who are they showing up with? You know, it's not like you have a solid A crew every day and every call that comes out. And, you know, that's just the added part of accountability for the company officers, you know, is that they have to, you know, do all these pieces, all the stuff we're putting on the plate, and then look after their crew, make sure that they're with them, make sure they're doing the right thing. And then also, you know, make sure they're doing their job correctly. You know, while you're trying to talk on the radio, it's like, hey man, get that coupling as you're trying to give a basement report, or, you know, hey, you need a 28, not a 14, you know? So all the, you know, once again, all those pieces that come together, I think that chiefs and command aides is, you know, Ray in the car, all we have to understand is that just the sheer amount of stuff that we lay on the company officers and firefighters for that matter. But, you know, I think it's important that, you know, the company officers obviously train those people. I mean, I can remember on more than one occasion, we would get a detail person in from a fire station that we didn't have a lot of respect for whatever reason. And we go, hey, guess what? We're going to go out and throw ground ladders, or we'd run the medical local. Go ahead and stretch to 400, you know, because who knows, in 23 and a half hours, we could be on that fire of our career. We never know when that fire is going to happen. So, you know, to just go, hey, it's a detail guy, let's not worry about it. Whereas, you know, we go back to what Scott was saying and what Ray was saying, hey man, we're here. Let's stretch the 400 and see where it gets. But we do that detail guy, but really we're testing ourselves and then we're testing you to make sure that you know how to, you know, deploy a Minuteman or know how to deploy the shoulder load or whatever it is that you need to do. So, we're getting kind of close. Ray, you got any final thoughts?
No, I think the biggest thing about that, talking about all those different things that these companies officers have to do, the one thing that I hear the most when we critique it and talk to people in these hot washes or even at the firehouse afterwards, and a lot of it comes from like the newer, younger officers is, I just had to get it out because either transmission or whatever else, because I'm scared I'm going to get in trouble or something else like that. And it's like, so now they are in this mentality of they're going to get in trouble if they don't do all this. And I tell them from a command aspect, it was like, where was their smoke? Where's your line? Where's your position? Everything else we can deal with. I have companies coming to the rear that are going to give a size up. They're the things I care about. And if you get that out, you'll develop the rest of it. Just get us the important information, come up with your game plan, and if you make a mistake, everyone makes mistakes. I'm sure Scott still makes mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. Chief Riley, I don't know. I'm sure you see a lot of mistakes.
I definitely make some mistakes.
Right. And that's the thing is I'm finding more, and I've talked to Roger about it, more and more people are scared to admit they make mistakes and come up with it. And that leads to them making the same mistake again.
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, same. Yeah, I think it's you know, it's a cultural shift, and that, you know, it's an odd one, but you know, it's I would say, yeah, scared to make mistakes. One, and I think two is you're keying that mic, man, and you know, not only the district's listening, and Fairfax is listening, and PG's listening, and God knows they're listening all over the country, and somebody's got a video camera going, and you know, it's a lot of pressure. You know, but at the end of the day, from my standpoint, you know, is there a basement? Am I going over it to raise standpoint or to raise point? Where's my line going? Where's the smoke or fire? And to the chief's point, you know, what's my plan? You know, what's my plan? And then I love what Chief Riley said early on, and Ray's kind of reiterated, is that that's how I look to my chief officer is, I need you to be there like Ricky was when he saw smoke coming out of the floor. I want you to say, hey, you forgot to, are you sure there's not a basement? Cause it looks like there's a basement from out front. I want that because it may be it's the fifth call after midnight. And actually that's a good one because I'm probably still awake, but if it's that call at 3 a.m. and I haven't gotten up in 3 hours, that's the one that's going to hurt. And so I appreciate, and that's what I look to my command officer to do is be a tactical chief and not just check boxes, because, and that's obviously a whole nother podcast, but Chief Schultz says it all the time, you know, task saturation. I am saturated, bottom line. You know, I'm, when I get there, there's a lot going on. And if there is a lot going on, that means we have work. So the smoke showing over the eaves, that's light and lazy. And, you know, the homeowner standing there with a cup of coffee, you know, that doesn't freak me out. I can check all my boxes at that point. Hell, I'll even labor the floors for you. But when there's, you know, when there's fire showing and I've got people screaming and buildings are being dumped, that's when I need the chief to say, hey, you know, 25 engine, look, take a nice thorough lap. We're going to slow this down. All other companies, you know, hold your position in the front yard, whatever it may be, so that I can set the stage for a successful operation as opposed to rushing through, checking the boxes and forgetting, you know, a minor detail to the point of this podcast that gets somebody killed.
I mean, I wrote down a note when Ray was talking. I know we're getting to the, supposed to be closing up, but Ray just got me thinking, is that, you know, I always loved old school Washington DC battalion chiefs. They were just like, they were the epitome of chief officers. Cause they, from the time the call got dispatched till the call ended, that chief had a say in everything that was going on at that incident. So, I mean, you would hear the power call in the background in his buggy, and he's talking to the companies on the scene, you know, because he had, you know, he got an aide. You know, all he can think about is the fire, the building, and what the information that he's getting, because Ray's driving him to the call now. You know, so now that's all he can focus on. He can have the headset up. He can be talking on the mic. He can be looking at, you know, CAD information, you know, and then, you know, Scott is the company officer. Let's say Scott's working in DC this week, you know, and he's the company officer. He's got all this stuff going on. Ray and the chief, you know, are having this conversation going down the road, you know, and helping him make decisions. And that's what it's all about. It's look, if the battalion chief and the aide and the company officer, if we miss a bunch of steps, hey, that's for the next guy in line to start beating us up over. You know, we're supposed to be the battalion chief, the command team, and the company officer. We're like the pilot and the co-pilot in an airplane. You know, if we're going to go down, both of us are going down. So if one of us misses something, we hope the other one catches it. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, an important piece that, you know, the battalion chief should be definitely working in together with that company officer to touch all those bases for that, you know, for that particular fire. So we don't miss anything. And no company officer should be upset by being asked a question by a responding chief, by a chief that's sitting out front, is that, hey, where's the report on this? Or, hey, what's the condition here? What's the condition there? So, but, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, I want to make sure that one that I want to thank Ray and Scott for getting on. It's been a long time since we had this, you know, we thought at the beginning in the pre-show that we weren't going to have enough information to fill it up, but obviously Ray and Scott did an excellent job of providing information and getting more questions coming in to each of us. We also like to thank Pete and Clarion Events Group for one, attaching the line of duty death report from Frederick County onto the social media events so everybody can kind of read it. We have to give a lot of thanks to the Frederick County Fire Department and Fire Chief Coe for commissioning that report and letting it be honest. That's something that when I read a lot of AARs and I'm actually at the fire or listen to the fire and go, yeah, this doesn't match at all. You know, this just, you know, what they're saying in the AAR does not match what I heard or what I saw on the fire ground. I think, I wasn't on the fire ground in Frederick County. I listened to it, tragic day. I think the report certainly fills in a lot of the gaps that were missed that, you know, I couldn't visually see or hear, or there was bleed over. You got to thank Chief Coe. It takes a strong man to commission something like that, knowing that, a lot of things are going to be pointed at about your organization. So he deserves a lot of credit for that. So Ray and Scott, please have a great rest of your day. If you want one of Scott Kraut's sporty headbands, you can go to traditionstraining.com. We'll start selling those now. But I appreciate it. Pete and Bobby Holden, and we thank the Fire Engineering and the Clarion Events Group for the opportunity for us to share our views on the fire service and in our geographic area and what we think's good. So thanks, guys, for being on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks, Pete.
See you guys.
See ya.